Hello, hi everybody. Just about to start the meeting now. The first thing is to welcome everybody to the Housing Planning and Regeneration and Regulatory Services Scrutiny Committee. I did that in one breath there, that was good. Just to read out to remind people that the meeting will be recorded tonight, the tape recorder's on, and the sound recording subsequently made available for private council's website. In addition to this, be advised that under the openness of local government bodies regulations of 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings is not under the council's control. If there's any queries about these arrangements, please speak to the Democratic Services officer on this. So first item is apologies for absence.
Councillor Mercer is the lead member for Housing,
sending
his apologies.
Yeah, thank you. Disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests. Really, there's none mentioned. Decorations from the party whip, I don't think we've had any of those. Obviously quite rare. Questions and scrutiny for committee procedures. No questions have been submitted, so we'll move on to item number 5, which is the new scrutiny committee structure in terms of reference.
Thank you. This is Caroline speaking. So the terms of reference and remit were covered off in an earlier training session for members of the committee, so I don't intend on going through the report. And the report is simply here for the noting, unless there's any questions that I can take. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Unless there are any questions, we did discuss this a bit earlier, so I think we'll put out any further ado. We'll move on to item number 6, the 2018-19 quarter-four performance monitoring and end of year account group report. So I think we have a number of people here to discuss, and we'll pick up. Yeah, I think if we can pick up on the red items, we've got people here. The first one is the corporate plan outcome.
So the first indicator is SE2PR, which is about completing the milestones in the work and development scheme 2018-2021. I'd like to invite Councillor Hardy, who's the lead member, and Richard Bennett to come to the table to discuss.
Oxford a bit then. thank you, Chair. Yes, I'll just say a few words of a non-technical nature. Just to, as an introduction to this item. As we know, that our development plan, as it moves forward, slowly becomes dated, and we've actually had a housing needs assessment carried out, which shows that there is now a new requirement to build more houses within the borough. So we started, we need to prepare another plan, as the other one becomes dated. If we don't have one of those, if we don't develop a new plan, then our communities are at risk for unwanted development and various other aspects of it that are undesirable. When we knew this was happening, we tried to do as short a plan as we could to get from A to B in shorter time as possible. That would help us to mitigate, if you like, those threats of unwanted development. So it was quite keen that we shorten this as much as we can. We were quite, we knew it was going to be challenging. We knew it was going to be challenging. And as a result of this, as we got forward with staff sicknesses and various other things, we got to a point where we were heading towards the election in May this year. Now, we could have perhaps done something, squeezed something together and got it out just before the election, although that was now become a bit doubtful as we move forward, but that's what we could have done. But this is a new council, so the point is that this new council and new councillors should have a part in the consultation process that we're heading towards in September this year. So we're heading towards that, and we're trying to get the timescales appropriate for that. We have a plan to do that in September this year to go out for public consultation. And ahead of that public consultation, just to let you know that I've arranged for a technical briefing for all members ahead of it going out for public consultation. So there has been slippage. There has, we can tell what those, I'm sure Richard can give a lot more detail than me, the reasons for that. But what you need to understand, there was an intention that we should try our hardest to get this plan being into place as soon as we possibly can for our community's sake. There's been some slippage. We're still working very hard. We're still doing very well compared to the last plan, which took about 7 years, was it, Richard? Something like that, to come to fruition. This is going to take a couple of years or something like 2 or 3 years. So we're ahead of progress. This is not a plan where you just sit down and write it, as you're aware. This is a plan. This is a plan that every part of it is evidenced, and every part of it is there going to be open to public scrutiny at some point in the future. So you just can't just sit down and knock something out. It's got to be factual, it's got to be evidence-based, and it's got to be subject to public scrutiny, etc. So that's roughly where we are, why there's been some slippage, good intentions, but we're still on track, in a sense, in a new track. And that, I think, it came to Cabinet in, where was it, Richard? The new plan, do you know?
When is it coming to Cabinet?
Yes.
We're looking to get it to Cabinet in October.
Yeah, and the development scheme went to Cabinet
March.
In March of this year. So it came to Cabinet in March this year, and that was circulated to all members to say what the plan was. So that's roughly it. Any more technical questions, perhaps, Richard?
Okay, Rick, do you want to say anything now, Richard?
Just if I may, Chair, add to what Councillor Vardy said. So we've agreed that as a council we're going to prepare a new local plan to bring to revise the current plan to identify where the future houses need to go. The programme for that plan is called the Local Development Scheme, and that is considered by Cabinet on an annual basis in March. So for this monitoring year, for the corporate plan, it's monitoring the performance of that plan making activity against the local development scheme that was approved in March 2018. So as Councillor Vardy has just said, the plan making process was, the programme for that was put together on the assumption of an accelerator programme. Work being right first time and having a streamlined process through the plan making process. But as Councillor Vardy has said, in the year, about mid-year I think it was, it became clear that due to competing priorities within the service, that those milestones were becoming challenging. The key milestone was to publish a draft in October of 2018. But notwithstanding that, the Local Development Framework Board, which oversees the preparation of the plan, wanted us to go and do some more work around options before we move forward again. So we had to go back and revisit some work to at the request of the board before we could move forward. And I think it was at that point that we realised that we were going to be adrift. And I think in the quarter three performance report, we signalled that an amber return. Because it was looking unlikely, or it might be quarter two report, we were signaling it was going to be unlikely we were going to meet the local development scheme milestones at that point. So in the event, we presented to Cabinet in March 2019 a revised programme, recognising that slippage and mapping out a new programme going forward. So as Councillor Vardy has said, we're now aiming to do a draft level plan in October of this year. So that's about a year slippage from where we were last year.
Thank you. Do you have any questions from the committee members? Anyone like to? Councillor Hunt.
Thank you. Could I ask, what's the impact, is there any impact in fact, on either the council or residents on missing the deadline that we originally set?
Well, you've got to give this, you've got to give more technical
answer. Through you, Chair, it's not a technical answer. There's a statutory requirement for us to have a local development scheme that set out the milestones, and the purpose of that is so that, you know, our communities are clear about what our programme is going to be. But it is the case that these programmes have to be kept under review and replaced on an annual basis and show a rolling 3-year period of plan preparation. So, there is no direct impact on residents or the council in that sense. We have to ensure that we are replacing our plan in a timely way, because the longer our existing plan runs without being reviewed, it starts to creep at the hinges over time, and we want to make sure as a council that we've got a strong development plan in place to protect our communities and be clear about where we want future development to go. So that's the imperative, really.
Can I just add to that? The practice that does, I already alluded to, the fact that if our plan becomes dated, then it's easily challenged by developers through the appeals process. And that's something we are desperate for. This is why we try to get everything through as quickly as possible. And we still are. We're still ahead of the last plan, for goodness sake, out of 7 years. You were part of that. And 7 years tortures. But we got there from A to B. But this time it's going to be really a down to about 3 years or something. About 3 years. So we are working, and the staff are working, officers are working really hard to get this from A to B. But my concern has always been our communities being exposed to developers and then challenging our plan because it's become out of date. And they can do that. They can do that's what, you know, with how we've had our housing needs assessment, says you need this, and they'll start challenging things unless we get a new plan in place as soon as possible.
Thank you. Any questions at this point for the lead member? Okay, I think I'd just being on plans committee, it is a worry that we haven't got the local plan in place, and that one is a denial this, and quite often it comes up, is this policy going to stand up to the test of appeal because it's been there for so long? So I think it's important that we do move forward with such a...
You want to respond to that?
If I may, just to be clear to members around the table, we do have a local plan in place. The core strategy and the same policies of the local plan do provide the development plan for Charnwood and provides the context against which planning applications are determined. I think the challenge is that as our policies get older, so there is more risk of them being challenged through the appeal process. So we're trying to ensure that we've revised our local plan before that becomes a real issue for the authority. So the programme that we've got in place should see the new local plan replacing both the core strategy and the safe policies of the borough local plan by 2020, which is within the period of time that we need to do it to ensure that we've got that protection.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, any further questions from? Just to add that, yes, I have been some specific logic out that is noted, but it is key that we now try to stick to the programme as best we can, and perhaps that's something we will be looking at. So hopefully we're going to be reporting good news to us. Excellent. Okay, there are no further questions. We'll move on to the next item, if that's okay.
Are we dismissed now, Chair?
Sorry.
Are we dismissed in this
case? Okay. Okay, I think we're the next break, we're on to the next break, that indicates which I think we've got is SLE4, is that correct? So we've got the lead member officer in there.
Yes, Councillor Smidowitz, happy to respond for this one. As part of the council's three-year capital programme, funding was allocated to support a number of improvement projects for our main car parks. One of the first improvements planned was the design and installation of new railings to the top floor of Beehive Lane to improve health and safety. Design drawings were developed and submitted, and planning permission was approved at the end of September 2018. The procurement process was undertaken in January and March 2019, but unfortunately, there were no successful bids received. So a further procurement process is now planned for 2019-20. But also, some of you may remember the fire in Liverpool. So during 2018-19, a major installation of a fire detection and protection system was required, again, very much health and safety, which took precedent over the other projects. This has now been procured and the installation is now near to completion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, and we'll fill in all the technical stuff. All of it.
Good grief, all the technical side.
Okay, Chair, a few details there. So it's part of a three-year capital programme we've done and bidding for funding, which we've received. And this was part of the first scheme we're implementing. At the moment, we're at the stage where we've got the planning permission in place. That was like Councillor Smidowitz confirmed, that was in September. When we went out, we drew the tender documents together in October, November time, then issued the tender documents in December. So the procurement process was for contractors to come and visit the site, see what was required, and then submit a bid. We only had actually received one bid out of all the people that visited. The problem we had was that we reviewed that bid and we didn't think it was good enough for what we would required. We had some concerns in terms of, believe it or not, health and safety, in terms of the installation, because you've got to bear in mind, whilst you think, well, it's just putting up some railings, there's some significant health and safety implications when you're doing it six floors up. You've got to make sure the railings are secure. It's also the construction of that, because it's in the middle of sort of three roads, so with a lot of people walking by, so there's some significant health and safety implications here. So what we're doing now is we are taking a fresh look at it. We're going to get some further advice in terms of the health and safety implications, and look to carry on a procurement process this year. And hopefully we'll have some successful bidders this year, and that's what we're looking for over this next 12 months. But in terms of the implications of the fire side of it, that was obviously something we wasn't intending doing, and had to do an extra bid for that fire, the fire protection system that we're having installed, and that has been quite a significant project. So happy to answer any questions.
Okay, do you have any questions from the floor?
Can I ask where the tender was advertised for the railings?
We follow our procurement process that we have to go through, and it goes through these. Well, it's a tendering process. We advertise the tender through Source Leicestershire, which then is picked up by a number of different. It basically goes national, through this. Through this sort of procurement process, and we also. We can approach where we're aware of contractors that might be able to do this as well. We're able to let them know that tender is out for bids, basically. So it is quite widely advertised. Yeah. We did have a lot of interest on the actual site, our tender site. There was hundreds of people that looked at the tender application. We only actually had
three contractors visited the site to have a look as well. So it was quite widely advertised.
Chair, if I could just ask, what do you think the barriers were to getting more contractors who wanted to do the work? I understand there was a health and safety concern about the one that did, but it's concerning that there was only one. Also, I appreciate separately if you could tell me a bit more about, you said that you were getting further advice about the health and safety implications. Tell me who that's from and what you hope to get from that.
Okay, so first question. Obviously, that's my opinion here, because obviously we don't know. I can't go to contract that didn't put in a bid.
Yes, I don't
know why they didn't. I think sometimes these national companies look at the size of contracts and think, well, is it worth our time to make a bid? And they do look at the size of the contracts, and sometimes that they're just not interested because of the size of the contract. Because this was a £50,000 contract, and for some of these national contracts, you're talking £1 million contracts, and you're not interested. So that's made us rethink in terms of maybe the support needed for some contractors on the health and safety side, and maybe do our specification that helps them to put in a bid that covers a lot of the health and safety stuff. So that's why we're looking at further advice on that. We've got we employed a structural engineer to look at the drawings and help us submit the drawings, because of it, we need that. As part of that company as well, they do health and safety sort of advice as well and support. So that's what we want to look at. Because when you're talking about steel railings on a sixth floor of a building, we want to make sure we get it right. But it's also, it's not just that, it's one of the company that did approach us wanted to put a big structure up there to house all this metal railings in one location. We thought, hang on, there's something not quite right in use. There's something not quite right about that, so that's why we want to get a bit more information in detail and do it right. I think, you know.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay,
but
if that answers, Councillor Hunt.
Thank you. Just a couple of questions, if that's okay. Have we asked our peers who they use, perhaps, or maybe NCP, who perhaps have contractors that they use all the time for this kind of thing? I'm thinking Nottingham City Council just pulled down Broadmarsh. They must have, and they're building again elsewhere. So I would imagine they would have people that they deal with for car parks. And I'm wondering if we're currently safe. If we need this in order to be health and safety aware, as it were, and totally, are we currently safe now?
So, two questions.
Yeah.
So first question, in terms of our peers, we did obviously contact, we did talk to all the car park providers to see what they use, see what systems they've got in place as well. Because why we're putting these railings up from a health and safety point of view is because we have concerns of people getting on top of the wall. We've had a few incidents of that nature. To make sure we protect vulnerable people when they go up to the top of the car park there. We have had a few incidents like that, so that's the main reason why we're doing it. So we did talk to others, have a look at the systems. The trouble is, when you're talking about a new car park, it's designed in.
Yes.
When you're retrofitting something, it's slightly different. And there aren't that many examples out there that provide that information. So that's why I went to a specialist sort of structural engineer to give us some designs and actually do that work for us, have a look at what's out there, have a look at the designs, that sort of thing, to come up with that design, really. In terms of the current situation, and so your second question, in terms of the safety aspect, as part of that we did install some Harris fencing and made that all secure at the height we want it to be. And that has been very successful. Whilst, you know, we want to improve on that and put the railings around, it has been very successful and stopped some incidents occurring. If someone's really determined, they'll still do that. Even with railings higher, they'll still do that if they really are determined to climb. But at the moment, it has been very successful.
Thank you.
Okay, brilliant. Any further questions from the floor? Okay, brilliant. I'd just like to add that I sort of picked up on the point of procurement, as you mentioned, the vein work, although it's a large amount for the borough, it's not a large amount for some of the bigger ones at the moment, and they are picking and choosing what they do. I don't know, it's worth looking at some more local advertising, such as the, I don't know, there are publications that go out in Leicestershire, such as the Leicestershire Builder or Best American or something like that as well, to pick up a small size company. So that's something worth taking on board.
Can I just make a response? Is that okay, Chair? Thank you for that. I mean, that's why we're looking at maybe possibly getting this structural engineer involved as well, to support more local companies with the ability to potentially do that type of work. So it's that sort of thing you think about, but we want some support in doing that, because we need the technical support to help us. We when we go out for tender, we want the companies to come with that technical support and that technical know-how and that health and safety experience during installation, but we may be rethinking that to maybe get someone to help and support maybe local companies to do that.
I think that's important, to get the smaller firms in that don't maybe have the clients with the engineers, architects that the bigger firms did do. So yeah. I appreciate that. That's useful to hear. So otherwise, any further questions around the committee members? If not, we'll head on to the next item. That's okay.
Our red KPI, just for new members, just from a background perspective, about a year ago we took on a new contractor for the delivery of our investment in our housing stock, kitchens, bathrooms and heating systems. And I have to say, certainly I've been involved in right from the very beginning on the project board, and that's sort of like through the procurement process, and thought interviewed very well. That is some of the other contracts that were decided on the correct process for delivery or to take on, and they won the contract. Initially, mobilisation has been quite slow, and it's been slow from the first instance because we didn't actually have all of the contractors in place, as we would like to actually kick off the programme as quickly as it should have done. So mobilisation has been slow. But it has significantly improved. And obviously, the red indicator is alluding to the kitchen heating installation programme. At the close of quarter four, the following were completed. That's kitchens were 81, as you can see in the report. Bathrooms 109 and heating 296. So although they've been slow to mobilise, I have to say the work that anyone's seen, many of the work they've done with the kitchens or the bathrooms are amazing. And the quality has been second to none, hasn't it? It's been exemplary. I have to say, I'd love to live any of them, in any of them in my house or our houses. So really, if you know, I'm happy to take any questions, or if you know, my office is Peter or the senior director Eileen from the
Chairs.
Yeah,
could I possibly add on to the end of that, please? Yeah, just to be clear, the kitchen programme was completed, the heating programme was completed, it's the bathrooms that weren't completed. They've been a little bit slow, and that's why it's red. So those bathrooms have now been completed.
Completion's progressing well, since the start of this year, 62 standard bathrooms and light-for-light level exit shower replacements have started. 40 have been accepted by the council as handed over. We won't accept anything that's handed over until we're absolutely happy with it. That means that the contractor won't get paid until we're happy with it as well. 6 are completed, not yet handed over, and 16 are work in progress. So in terms of programme progress, the outlook is positive for the rest of the year.
Okay, thank you. Do you have questions from the committee members on this? Councillor Kate Caton?
Yes, could the it's gone red because we didn't deliver on all of the refit. How does that affect the A decent homes criteria and the child criteria?
Yeah, certainly. The decent homes standard says that it can't be some. I'll rewind a little bit.
Yeah.
The way we set our programmes, generally speaking, is by component dates. So we say that the kitchen has a life cycle of approximately 20 years, a bathroom of 30 years. So, and then we also look at early vendors as well. And the decent home standard says that that something can't be non-decent just by age alone. And there also has to be more than one component that's failing as well, because if what we've got here is a small number of bathrooms that just weren't completed within the year, but they're now complete.
Okay, thank you very much.
I think sometimes, in support of what Peter's mentioned, I think we often, it's the time it takes to hand over as well, doesn't it? The bathroom has been completed, but our standard, I have to say, the Fordham really didn't realise how high the Charlton standard is, and actually exceeds, I guess, national standards.
Yes.
Every time we've had meetings, we've gone out to do visits, they just couldn't believe our expectations, which is great for the residents.
Yeah, brilliant. That was a best question, Councillor Cage, I'm going to Councillor Hunt.
Thank you very much. Two questions, if I may. I think I'm right in saying that during the year that somebody is going to receive a new bathroom or a new kitchen, a letter goes out to say, during sometime this year, you're going to get one.
Yes.
The ones that didn't actually get it, did we tell them in good time so they weren't hoping for it right to the 31st of March? And secondly, were there any of those properties that were void? So was there any impact on void, is what I'm asking.
Okay.
Thank you.
In respect to the first question,
yeah.
I can't respond to it.
Okay.
But I could say I'd be happy to check and then revert to you afterwards.
Yeah, thank you.
And then secondly, in respect of void properties, generally speaking, not. If it were a void, then we would take the property at void and do what was necessary at that point. The way in which that would work is it's a... I guess what you're saying is, say for example, somebody's on the programme,
yes,
and then they decide to end the tenancy,
yeah,
and then the property becomes vacant before the work is done.
Yeah.
What would normally happen is that our in-house voids team would get hold of it, they'd say, well, I need a new bathroom, or perhaps it needs a, I don't know, the system or the toilet replacing, and those works would then be done in order to get them to meet the appropriate standard for relet, and then be let at that point. So it shouldn't necessarily slow down the void process.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions for this? So, okay, I think that's each way. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, through the main performance, the rest are all green. I don't really intend to go through those specific matters on that. I think moving through the report, we've got the business plan indicators that are. That are generally green. So I think we've got a record on the indicator, which is K12, number 4 door homes delivered. I think we've got the officer heads and the lead team manager.
It's actually green and
it's green.
So
it's
green again.
Okay, yeah, certainly I can provide you with a short summary overview of that report. So in terms of complaints performance, we did about 12,500 reactive repairs last year for the in-house team, alongside capital investment, some of which was delivered by about £4.1 million, and then a host of compliance activity was also done within the repairs and investment team as well. So that's things like electrical checks and that kind of thing. So there's a significant volume, I guess, the point I'm trying to make, that goes through the repair service. And so the 244 complaints received is a very small fraction of that delivery volume. You may also have noted from the data as well, it's actually quite a significant reduction in terms of the number of complaints on the year before as well. As you can see from the data, most complaints are resolved at stage zero, which is the informal stage of the complaints process. Of course, we're constantly looking at the lessons that we learn from complaints and opportunities to improve. Only last month, we asked the Housing Ombudsman to come in and do some training with our officers of response to complaints so we can look at best practice. I guess furthermore, although it's not detailed in the report, it's perhaps worth mentioning that the 2018-19 outcome, the percentage of tenants that were satisfied with their repair was 97%, so 97% of people who are happy. That's not just a few surveys, that's based on 692 surveys, so that shows that the vast majority of the time we do get things right.
Okay,
do you
have any questions from the floor from the members on that point? Councillor Graham?
If I could just ask, forgive my ignorance, what is included in these complaints? Is this just reactive repairs, or does it include complaints about fault in the delivery of the diesel?
That's in there, yeah. So it's responsive repairs. It could also be, for example, if we'd let a property, and somebody had an issue in respect of that, so it could relate to the void team. It could relate to the asset management team, so that could be anything from I'm not happy that you're not replacing my kitchen this year, through to, you know, because they're not on the programme, through to an issue with some of the work that's been delivered. Some complaints also go to Fortum as well, but obviously if they come straight to us, then we deal with the complaint there. And we also look at complaints received by Fortum, our contract core group. It also relates to complaints around the compliance team as well, so that's electrical testing, fire risk assessments, asbestos, that kind of thing. So it's everything that sits within our repairs and investment services for scope.
Thank you. Okay. Are there any further questions from committee members on this? Okay, we'll head on over the page.
So this information has been considered by the Housing Management Advisory Board, and they receive the detailed landlord services performance information back on a quarterly basis. So I just kind of lifted it for the purposes of this report. As you can probably see from the data, Shelthorpe and the Bell Foundry are where most of the council stock is located. An ASB report generally correlates with that positive number of stock numbers. So what you're seeing there is where we've got the most stock, we get the most complaints. But that said, the level of reported ASB is significantly above average at the Bell Foundry estate. We do enforce conditions of tenancy in the area, and three of the four evictions for ASB that we did last year took place on the Bell Foundry. Somewhat, I guess, in the context, it's one of the ones that stuck out to me when I looked at the data, is Sowerby had the second most reported ASB. And having interrogated the data, reports at Jubilee Avenue and Hopefield Road accounted for 51 of the cases in there. That ASB was relatively low level, and you can probably see from the data there was a reduction that took place in quarter four following investigations and actions. In some instances, challenge for us, complainants don't disclose their details to us, so they ring us up to say there's a problem with them, they don't tell us what their details are, so we can get that back to them. Or they ring up because they want to complain about somebody, and then when we request or make an action plan with them, they don't necessarily provide the information back to us on which we can base enforcement action. In such instances, our investigation is likely to be compromised, and those cases are also reflected in the data as well. Finally, the data shows that whilst legal action is taken, including possession, eviction, closure orders, injunction, the vast majority of cases are resolved informally through the issue of advice and warning letters and referrals to mediation. And that's that sits quite firmly in the context of the national picture. That's not unusual, that's the norm. The team is currently fully staffed. The caseload at the end of June was 115 cases, and the year-to-year customer satisfaction rate for case handling is at almost 92%.
Excellent. I think it's quite useful to hear. So obviously, the larger areas have larger numbers, and to have know where the average sort of works and see how they relate to the average, rather than because area with a larger housing stock is going to have a larger number. So I think that was quite useful to point out on there. So, do you have any questions from the committee members on this?
One quick question.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a difficult question, but let me just ask. There's quite a high number that are entered in error or duplicates. Is there anything we could do to improve so that they don't? Because we obviously takes time to input those in the first place. So is there anything we could do to stop that happening?
Yeah, I think sometimes they're entered in error because they're a true entered in error, i.e. somebody calls in and there's already a case open and the new one gets created, and that's entered in error. But that, what you're also seeing there is that sometimes three or four people will ring up in about the same thing and will close, because if it doesn't, although we will, and what we will then do is we'll then close down three of the cases and have one master case, and then we'll add the three complainants into that master case. So that's a practice, but I do accept the feedback, and what I can do is discuss it with my colleagues in the community safety team who have the county contract for sensing up, to see whether there might be any opportunity to maybe further include an additional category perhaps for where that's occurring, so a bit clearer on the number of points.
Thank you. I mean, it's a bit picky, I know, but anything that could reduce the time spent doing a duplicate and actually focusing on something else that needs to be done right now is improvement, I think. Thank you.
Great. That's great. Thank you. Unless there's any further questions, thank you very much for the report on that. Okay. I think that now we move on to item number 7, the work programme.
Thank you, Chairman. Carol Willis, please. So, the item 7 on the agenda is the Scrutiny Commission agreed to the Scrutiny Work Programme at its first meeting on the 3rd of June 2019, and set out in the appendix is the Scrutiny Work Programme from which the review, delete any topics, or indeed add any topics which you feel require scrutiny. So, over to you, and Nikki will assist in any queries. This is all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do you just want to show briefly through the items that are coming up?
Absolutely, yeah. So looking on the appendix one, which page 37, so 3rd of September, that's the standard item that comes up every time, that's the work programme. 3rd of September, we've got the full performance information report, which is for quarter one. 3rd of September, we've got the climate local action plan, which is the monitoring of the climate change strategy action plan. This is an annual item, so really for the 3rd of September meeting you've got two substantive items, performance monitoring and the climate action plan.
Just to give the committee some background about the climate local action plan, that was an annual item that the performance panel used to see. So, as you can see in the progress notes, that once you've had it on the 3rd of September, you can consider whether you think it's still relevant to have that added to your work programme.
Moving on to the 10th of December meeting, you've got progress against the actions in the housing strategy, and that is to scrutinise progress against the actions. And that was added by the former Scrutiny Management Board in October 2017. 10th of December, you also have a performance report for quarter two. Turning the page, you then go on to March, and that again is the performance quarter three report. And then there are two items to be scheduled. One that relates to the five-year housing land supply, which we discussed earlier today, and the other item relates to the local plan. So those do need to be scheduled to a future meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. I think to say the next meeting we've got quite a few on there, so we just need to schedule in the five-year housing site and local plan. Do you know when the appropriate time is to do those?
Regarding the five-year housing land supply, that only needs to be scheduled if it falls below the 5.5 years.
Sure. Yeah.
So regarding the local plan, you did have a briefing note on that matter, and I think it's on the work programme for you to schedule once the public consultation the second time has occurred.
And maybe do a little when that public consultation through your chair is going to have to progress.
I'm only looking at the briefing note that was circulated to the full committee, and the timetable in there is that the draft local plan consultation will take place in October 2019 with the pre-submission consultation in April 2020, and then it will be submitted in August 2020. So I'm guessing that you would be considering looking at this item potentially in your December meeting.
Pick up the next item in the future meeting days for the committee, which is the 3rd of September 2019, the 10th of December 2019, and the 3rd of March 2020. So that's the last item. Thank you to the officers and the members for coming on. Thank you to the committee members as well for your input. Thank you.